Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper, and today is a first. I've got two co-hosts today, Mr. Hunter Heinlein and Justin Brill. Justin hails from Illinois. Just razzing him about being from Illinois, and he comes to Missouri all the time, Hunter, to visit. Must be a great place over here, but he's always got a comeback. What was that comeback, Justin?
I said you always make fun of me about being from Illinois until you're asking me about coming deer hunting.
One jewel in the crown, and he plays it like an ace.
I'm going to keep that trump card. I'm going to drop it every time I can.
I don't blame you. I would, too. You can't argue when it comes to big bucks in Illinois, but you were just showing me some pretty good photos of some Missouri bucks, and I won't even indicate where, you know, don't want to give your little honey hole away. Your son would get very mad at us.
Little Jace would be, well, not so little anymore, but yeah, Jace would be upset with you. He keeps it close to the vest.
I bet he does. But Hunter, lots of exciting things going on with Living the Dream Outdoor Properties these days, man. Today, we're sitting here in the office complex and got an event going on that's called Catch, Clean, and Cook Adventures. Kind of a weird name there, but Big Mike Jones, and he's also known as the Roving Reporter. He's here out of Mississippi, and he has helped me put together a program I've been wanting to do for decades. But, boy, it's tough to organize a big event. We've had like 15 riders involved coming from five states, and Mike's pretty good at organizing these events and getting people together. And I'm excited about it tonight. It's kind of the opening ceremony, and then we're going to be fishing Merrimack Spring Park for a day, and then hopefully get on the river. We're going to be dragging some canoes and kayaks and rubber rafts, I think, because yep. The water's a little bit low. But, Hunter, there's some other things going on that I'm pretty excited about. You guys have gotten involved with the Missouri Hunting Heritage Federation?
Yeah, Missouri Hunting Heritage Foundation. And basically, what that group does is they introduce, younger kids and people that have never had a chance to, get out there and hunt and enjoy the outdoors, that opportunity. They're a really, really good group of guys. And then also, you know, what they do is they're looking for some people that can either donate some land to hunt on or mentors, or just really a space where they can come in and teach these kids and help them get their hunter education. And it kind of turns into an all weekend event. I believe it kind of starts Friday, mainly Saturday, where they teach the kids the hunter safety course. They get through that, they get qualified. So they learn all the good stuff first. And then, they go ahead and that afternoon, I think they, go ahead and practice on the range a little bit, whether that's with a rifle or a bow, and that mentor's there with them. Like me, myself, I'm going to be a mentor with a young one. I don't know who, but the dates we're doing that is, let me look, for the 17th through the 19th of October, I think. So we're going to have that going on up here at the office. I'm pretty excited about it. I think I might even take a kid over to my own farm, and whatever walks out, I guess, might get an arrow.
Well, yeah, they don't get too choosy.
No. Well, you know, I'm going through my second childhood. I would probably qualify.
Right, yeah.
A great program. I actually helped with one of those programs at Merrimack Spring Park last year. It was the first deer hunt ever held on the Merrimack Spring Park grounds. And I can't remember how many kids we had. I won't say eight or ten, but they were hunting with crossbows. We actually had one deer killed. This kid shot this deer at like 6 feet, walked right in front of me, blind, you know, so it was pretty incredible.
Oh, that's cool. I bet that kid will never forget
and
that.
The cool thing about them is that foundation, you know, if you are somebody that wants to host them, you know, they have all of the equipment. So it's not like you have to have 10 crossbows or whatever, or five right. or six, however. And it's usually a pretty small group. And I've been talking to Colton Zirkle there. He's, I think, their main guy that orchestrates all of this with the landowners and the kids that want to come in and do it. And so he's a very nice guy to talk to, but I've got his number here. It's if you need to get a hold of him or interested in doing something like this, it's 573-200-1889. But anyways, he's been good to talk to, and my main contact and my dad's, and we're definitely excited to host that. So we'll see what happens. Maybe we'll get lucky. Regardless, maybe we'll just get, you know, some kids interested in the outdoors. So
that's what it's all about, man. And all of us are old enough, you know, that we have seen the decline in hunters across the country, and fishermen too. Missouri is one of the few states that's a few years ago we were gaining hunters a little bit. I think we've kind of stabilized a little bit too. But it's extremely important for those of us that love hunting, that want to see it continued. Man, everybody needs to kick in a little bit and help out with these programs, because sometimes it's difficult to get mentors to give up a weekend or 2-3 days to help with these programs, because all you young guys, you know, got children and that sort of thing. They play ball and go to church and run around with their friends, and families are extremely busy. So it is tough sometimes for the Federation to get
Foundation
to get people to volunteer. Yeah. So, hey, my hat's off to you for volunteering to help this program. But Colton Zirkle does an extremely good job of educating these kids, because he's got all the latest and greatest tools and toys to educate with, you know, and just does an astounding job. And of course, I think he has board members that help as well. So you get a real cross section of people coming from across the state to help with these programs. And I think it just gives the kids a top notch outdoor education. I got to ask you guys, now y'all both pretty young. Either one of you ever been through a program like this?
I have not.
It was first I heard of it was from you. Yeah.
Well, of course, I'm so old, they didn't even have a hunter education when I started. You know,
you're grandfathered in.
Yeah, exactly. 2 or 3 times, I think.
Your great grandfather.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I am going to be great grandfather in February.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, congrats. I'm tickled pink. I didn't think I'd ever live long enough to see that, you know, but. Because I guess I was a late bloomer, and so were my kids. You know, we're all late in life, a little later in life, starting families. I was 28 or 29 and adopted that first one. But regardless, I got it started, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Me and my first wife told we couldn't have kids, adopted a little girl 6 days old. 2 months later, we was pregnant. So we had little girls 11 months apart. People said, how'd you do that?
It's contagious.
Yeah. I have my tricks. But, yeah, this hunting situation, man, it's just grand to see kids get involved like this. But the thing is, you know, back in my day, hey, I traipsed along behind my dad and all his hunting buddies, you know. And those old guys weren't great at teaching you, you know, to squirrel hunt or rabbit hunt or coon hunt or whatever. You learn by observation.
Oh, yeah. And it's like growing up over where I'm at, and we talked about it, you know, Illinois is big deer hunting state, but you go back 50 years, it wasn't. My dad talks about when he was in high school, if somebody saw a deer track, they said you were crazy. I mean, all they did then was small game, quail. We actually had quail, rabbit, squirrel, and duck and goose hunt and stuff like that. And you'd have to drive way down to the Shawnee National Forest to deer hunt, or you'd have to come over here in Mark Twain and hunt that kind of, or hunt around that area. But, I mean, honestly, like my dad and I learned deer hunting together. He started maybe 5 years before I did.
Well, that's cool.
It was, but it was kind of, you know, as a kid, I'm sitting there going like, so what should I do here? He's like, I don't know.
So you know as much as I do. Huh?
Yeah, and it's, you know, we kind of did that. And it was neat as he got older. My dad's still alive, but as he doesn't hunt as much anymore. But as he got older, then it kind of role reversed and be like, yeah, Dad, your blind's all set up. Yeah, we got your chair out there. Yeah,
awesome.
No, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And now that he's quit doing it, I just rolled right into the son doing it.
Exactly. But I've listened to you talk enough, and you've educated yourself about deer and turkey hunting. We're good at both of them. So I'm sure you actually got to educate your dad some.
Oh, yeah. We've had some, you know, it's interesting because he'd be like, you know, it'd be stuff like clothes or his backpack or something like that. And I'm not talking like the camouflage pattern and stuff like that, but I'd be like, you really need a different backpack. And he's like, why that? I'm like, because there's 473 zippers on that thing, and you have to go through every one to find your candy bar. So, like, I'd be sitting there in the blind with him.
I'd just get him there with that.
Oh, yeah, you just hear, zip, yeah. Zip. And then he pulls out, like, the noisiest little Debbie wrapper ever, and, just, yeah. And he's like, man, I don't know why we're not seeing deer. Yeah, I can't figure it out either, Dad.
They need to make a special edition for outdoorsmen on those little, little zebra cakes.
Yeah, like exactly, because we all eat them.
A wrapper, like they can make a special limited edition camouflage box or something, a camouflage zebra pattern with a quilt for the wrapper. Just nice and quiet.
Well, let's start a new company. We might make another million. You know?
It's my wife will make fun of me because like I don't take a lot of stuff with me when I go out there to hunt, especially if I'm only going for a couple hours. Like I can survive without a ton of snacks, but when you got the kids, you know, it's, you're taking all kinds of, you want it to be enjoyable for them and make it almost like a treat. So we're going out there and it's, you know, candy bars and little Debbies and Pop Tarts and all this stuff. And I'm sitting there in the morning before we go hunting, packing the bag. And I got paper towels laid out and I'm putting all this stuff in paper towels and folding it up. And she's like, what are you doing? I said, cause that stuff's so noisy.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to figure it out. He needs to take class on how to pack your lunch.
That's right.
For deer. But yeah, all the things kids do. I remember one of my stepsons, he must have been about 9 years old, and I took him turkey hunting for the first time during the youth season. And it was a cloudy, dreary, kind of dreary, rainy day. I thought, oh, and he was kind of hyperactive anyway. I thought, man, this might be a miserable morning for him. So I kind of turned him loose in the blind, man. He crawled around and played with every stick, rock, bug, anything there was to do, you know. And I was literally just calling once ever so often and using a lost call like I use in a fall because I knew that was my only chance to get a bird to come in because 2-year-olds will come to it a lot. Mm-hmm. Lion calling in 30 minutes and he's still crawling around in the blind, making a good bit of noise. And I have to look up and went across the field. Here's a gobbler coming on a string, you know. I'm like, Cody, good man, you got to get up. You know, you got to get in your seat. He had a single shot, 20 gauge, I think. We got him all set up, you know. And he got the shakes, man. He got, you know, he saw this bird. He got all excited. He's closing in, man, 40, 30, down to 20 yards, got inside 20. And I got his hammer back for him on the gun. I said, Nick, get ready. You know where to shoot him. And I clucked. Old gobbler stretched his neck up, and the boy sneezed.
Oh, no.
He went over and said, Mama, he said, I blew a turkey away. And you're going, oh, my gosh. Oh, it's like the stars aligned, and everything come together, and we get a sneeze. But, Hunter, that's what you're facing with kids coming up, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I had a youth hunt once, and gosh, 20 years ago, had a big old boy, just about your size, with a little bit of guy that was a little bit hyperactive. And this boy came back so aggravated. He said, that kid, man, he wouldn't sit still, and he was noisy and did all this. He said, son, Dad, I got a big mole on my cheek here. And he said, he tried to pull it off. He thought it was a bug.
Uh-oh.
And then he had a gobbler coming for this kid. He was shooting a 20 gauge single barrel shotgun and got it up, you know, within killing range. And the kid dropped his shotgun out the front of the blinds.
Oh, my gosh.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So you got to be on your toes when you're mentoring these children.
That's one thing when I haven't done like the group hunt, you know, put it on for the kids, but just taking my own kid. And there's certain things like you don't realize you have to explain everything. I mean, down to the things that you just take for granted because it's second nature. You're like, yeah, you have, you know, well, first deer hunt that he did over here in Missouri, I kept telling him, you shoot for the shoulder. And deer came in quartering two, and he shot for the opposite shoulder, and he drilled it, but he didn't hit anything good.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, and he's like, I drilled it right in the opposite shoulder. I'm like, oh, no. He had a muzzle loader. We had to do a quick reload.
Well, of course, way kids think, and I'm way beyond that, you know. But I had another young fellow one time, a little bitty guy, and he was actually sitting in my lap, and I called in some jakes, had them coming. One broke out from behind a bush, you know, like a 13, 15-yard shot, and again, a little hammer gun. He shot that jake and just rolled it. Feathers just flew, and that jake took off. jumped up and took off running. We couldn't catch that rascal for anything. And I said, son, where'd you shoot that turkey? He said, man, I shot him right where you shoot a deer, right in the shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
I showed you 100 times, head and neck, you know. Yep. But he slipped back into deer hunting mode, shot him right in the shoulder. He rolled it you know. But
they get excited, and, I mean, Jace did it this year with turkeys. He had one coming in, and he couldn't pick out where they were at. But, and I, you know, little like you said, little things you don't think about. I'm considerably taller than my son. Even when we're sitting down, you know, I'm 6 inches to a foot above him. And I'm like, they're right there. He's like, I can't see him. I said, they're right there. I can't see him. I'm like, put your gun barrel right on the edge of this brush. And here they came out. And as soon as, and I was getting ready to ask him if he was ready. And there was no hesitation. Well, boom, he shoots. Dirt flies up in the air. He got so excited. I think he let go of the gun whenever he shot.
Yeah. But, oh, you never know what they're going to do. But it is funny. People's perceptions are so different. I remember my wife, first squirrels she ever killed, were out in the woods. This big old bushy fox squirrel runs up a little sapling out there, runs up about 6 feet. And just his head is right in the fork of this. And I said, shoot that squirrel. What squirrel? You know, didn't you just see that squirrel? Yeah, I saw that squirrel, but he disappeared.
Yep.
Well, I said, see that sapling right there? Yeah, I got it. I said, go up to that fork about 6 feet up. See that squirrel's head? No, I don't see a squirrel. I said, a squirrel's head is right there. Just shoot that fork of that limb, you know. Shot and rolled the squirrel out, you know. But she never saw that squirrel. So, hey, lo and behold,
yep.
Communications.
Well, it's this weekend. I had the boy out. He was squirrel hunting. And he's a little too young to be out there with a .22 doing it. So I got him. He's got a 20 gauge, and he's perfect. Finally got a good system. He wears a turkey vest, so he's got a chair. He can carry all his snacks, all his stuff. Fantastic. Dad doesn't have to be a pack mule anymore. So he goes out there, and, you know, he's been shooting trap, and he's been shooting a lot, and he's been doing pretty good with it considering he just started a year ago. And he's like, oh, yeah, shooting squirrels out of a tree with a shotgun, no problem. I think he was hitting about 40% this weekend. It was about 40%.
Well, we could tell tales on ourselves, but I want you to tell your story about your turkey hunt this spring, but I'm going to hold you to segment two on that. Hey, let's take a short break here. We're going to be right back in just a moment with more Living the Dream Outdoors.
Our forefathers gave us a Bill of Rights. One of those is the right to step in the front door of Pond Center, where the faint sound of eagles screeching from on high a bounding purple mountain's majesty browse the walls full of glorious firearms. It's hard not to shed a patriotic tear as your red, white, and blue blood becomes fortified by the sight of true freedom. Pond Center, located at 408 Highway 72 East in Brown, Missouri. Or give us a call at 573-426-GUNS.
Hey, this is John from CoAngler.com. Did you know that CoAngler.com is the newest online platform to connect anglers for fishing trips? You can create your free account, offer and request fishing trips, connect with anglers in your area, share some costs, share some knowledge, and share a great time in the outdoors. Whether you're fishing from a boat and you got an extra seat and want somebody to come with you, or you need some help shuttling those kayaks for your next float trip, CoAngler is a great way to connect with like-minded anglers in your area for a great time out on the water. So get on CoAngler.com and let's go fishing.
Hey there, listeners. At Conservation Federation of Missouri, we're more than just advocates for our environment. We're active in making a difference through hands-on programs that protect and preserve Missouri's natural resources. By becoming a member, you're supporting impactful initiatives like Share the Harvest, which provides venison to families in need, and Operation Game Thief, which helps combat poaching and protects our wildlife. You're also contributing to the RISPR grants, which fund local conservation projects across the state. Your membership makes these vital programs possible, ensuring that we continue to serve both our communities and our environment. Plus, as a member, you'll receive updates on these programs, invitations to exclusive events, and the opportunity to get involved in the work you care about most. Visit confedmo.org/join to learn more and to join us today. Together, we can support programs that protect Missouri's wildlife, waters, and way of life. Be a part of the Conservation Federation of Missouri, where action leads to conservation.
everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work of catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
This is Dan from the White Buffalo Fly Shop, your gateway to Missouri's blue ribbon trout streams and world-class smallmouth water. Whether you're headed to Mill Creek, the Kern, or the Gasconade, we've got the flies, the gear, and the local know-how to help you fish with confidence. If you're looking to sharpen your casting skills, join one of our hands-on clinics. Or if you'd like to craft your own fly rod, build it with us in one of our rod-building courses. You're always welcome in our fly tying nights to swap stories, share patterns, and get the latest hatch reports. White Buffalo Fly Shop is more than just a place to gear up. It's a hub for our local community. You'll find us at 605 North Pine Street in Rolla or online at whitebuffaloflyshop.com.
Hey everybody, this is Alex Rutledge with American Roots Outdoors. Check out my buddy's podcast show, Living the Dream Outdoors with Bill Cooper and Hunter Hindman. You're really going to enjoy this week's show.
Welcome back to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I hope you enjoyed that first segment, man. We got telling stories kind of, I don't know what the topic was when we started out. We got telling stories, and that's one of the fun thing, one of the most things, enjoyable things about the outdoor communications field. I just had a young lady out here at the front desk here at the Living the Dream Outdoor Properties building ask me what I enjoyed most, you know, about being in outdoor communications. And over the years, you know, I've done the radio, a little bit of TV, now the podcasts, and still today, my most favorite thing to do is just write a good old fashioned me and Joe went hunting story. And it's you don't see so many much of that anymore. I know, boy, the outdoor communications field just transformed so much in the 56 years I've been in it. And I remember about 30 years ago, a lot of the major magazines started drifting from me and Joe hunting and fishing stories to destinations.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us where to go and tell us how to do it. And I got to tell you, so much of that stuff was the most boring stuff in the world to have to write. It almost became drudgery, you know.
You were writing itineraries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Man, I said, surely people can figure out where to go and how to do it, you know. But we entered the information age, and everybody wants 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, tell me how to do it. But back to what I love, just a good old me and Joe went hunting story. You've got a fabulous story just about you and your son at the spring turkey hunt this
year. Yeah, we had a really good year this year. hunted a couple different states. I always hunted in Illinois, Missouri, and I wound up going to Iowa too, and had a great year. And but the best part of it was my son got his first turkey ever in Illinois during the youth season. He shot a Jake, and then we had a really special when he killed his first longbeard over in Missouri on our property. Late season, it was busy time of year. He had stuff going on, so we couldn't really hunt together until the last weekend of the season. Which,
last weekend.
Well, and it was Sunday was Mother's Day. So the plan was to hunt Saturday, call it good, come back evening. And then what's nice is in Missouri, private, you can hunt all day. So we gave it a little extra time, and we were, you know, hunting together, and we bounced around, and oh, we had some birds come in, and then he learned real quick that you can't move that much. They came into to his left, and we had birds in front of us gobbling just over the crest of a hill, and then I could see a strutter coming through off to the left side, and I said, Jace, there's a bird off to the left. I mean, I'm telling him, and he's, where? And I think he saw it out of the corner of his eye, and then he didn't even think about it. He just whipped the gun over, and, you know, naturally heads go up and turkeys take off. And then it was funny, though, the two birds that were over the crest of the hill, they didn't know what was going on. So they just stood there, and I hit the call again, and they gobbled, but they weren't coming off that edge. And I'm like, okay, we're going to crawl up to the top of this hill. And I go, we crawled up there. And I said, I could hear him drumming. I'm like, they're close. I can hear him. I said, crawl up to that tree.
Was he able to hear him drumming?
Yeah, he could hear him. Okay. Once he, because Bill's asking that because my son has hearing loss. He's got a hearing aid in. Yeah. So yeah, he struggles with some of that stuff. But he crawled up to this tree. I said, crawl up to that tree and slide up behind. He's so small. I mean, he's like 5 foot and 90 pounds. So he's like a little ninja crawling.
He looks like a tree.
Yeah, well, his first bird in Illinois, he was standing when he killed it. He was barely taller than the shrubbery, so he just stood up above it. I'd have looked like a telephone pole sticking out of it. But no, he crawled up to that tree and he went to get set up, and there was a sapling in his way. Instead of just like moving around the sapling, he grabs and he's shaking it trying to get it. And with that, I hit that call again, and that next gobble, they were 200 yards away. I said, we're done here, bud. So we went, walked around a little bit more. We, you know, and he was kind of coming down with a little bit of a cold or allergies or something. And we got to the end of the property, and I said, bud, I said, we're going to go out here. He goes, I said, we're going to go set up here. He's like, dad, I'm done. He goes, I really want to get one, but I'm done. I said, okay. I said, well, how about this? Let's go up to the top of the hill. I'll hit a call, see what happens. Okay. Hit a call. Pow, pow. A couple birds sound off. Got set up. Started calling. Two sets of birds. They wound up meeting.
Oh,
we gave them a little bit of time.
Great setup.
Yep. They wound up meeting over on the crest of the hill. And I could hear them scratching and walking through the leaves. And hit it with a little call. And two heads came up. Now, they were too far off at that point. We couldn't shoot. It was real. I mean, it's the last weekend of the season. It was thick as could be. And they came up and they start walking, and he's to my left, and naturally the birds just keep coming to the right, and it gets to a point to where he can't swing and shoot anymore. And I really wanted him to get one. And he goes, dad, I can't get on him. I said, okay. Well, I said, hold on, just wait. He goes, dad, we're going home in like an hour. If you got a chance, just kill one. I said, okay.
That was big of him.
Yeah, well, you know, he wants to see he wants to see production.
Yeah.
So I kind of got set up, and I used the gun up, and one popped up and got his head popped up through the brush. And I don't know how many pounds of pressure it takes for a Browning shotgun trigger to go off, but there was 1 ounce left. And he said, I'm on one. Pulled off the trigger real quick. I said, you're on one. He said, yep. I said, okay, one, two, three, and boom, he shot. And I saw something flop around, and I shot, got up, and I thought I missed because I saw two birds take off flying. Well, it turns out there was four of them.
Uh-huh.
So he killed his. I wound up hitting mine, and had to finish it off a little bit because I think it kind of ducked and rolled whenever I shot. But yeah, we wound up, and it was really special for me because that was my first double ever. And I did it with my son on our ground, and absolutely. It was his first long beard. And then a good friend of mine, Savannah Rudy, she's got a Rudy Ranch. She's doing it's a form of taxidermy. It's like the feather art. Mm. And she's actually did a really cool mount for us with turkeys and or with the two fans and the wings in the corner, and then like the back feathers as the backdrop.
Oh,
and she's also starting to do waterfowl. She'll do the same thing for ducks and geese and kind
really?
Of, yeah.
That sounds like a beautiful display, but I can tell you how envious I am. I've killed like 106 turkeys in my lifetime. I've never done a double.
I've done
one with my dad.
Wow.
And it is cool.
And see, I've told people I've never done a double before, and they're like, really?
Never? We turkey hunted with each other too from the time I was six. And I think I did that around the time I was maybe 20, and I'm like 30 now. So, I mean,
right. So in 24 years,
it took a while to get the double, but we did.
Well, that's just pretty incredible. Yeah. Both of you, as young you are, you got a double pulled off, and I've had, you know, guys who get set up, sure, you're going to get that double, you know. A lot of people out there with itchy trigger fingers, you know. And one of them shoots a little soon, messes up for the other guy.
Yeah.
And I got greedy one time. I was hunting up in North Missouri. All the turkeys I've killed, I never killed one over 23 pounds. And I had a guy, I was telling a football coach about it in St. James, and his family owned a farm up in North Missouri. Was come up here, he said, we've killed them up to 30 pounds. They killed a lot of 26 or 27 wow. pound birds. Boy, we're coming. So my wife and I went up there, and sure enough, he set us up close to a gap in a fence. He said, gobblers come through there every morning. So we set up close, and we got them, the goblin, and coming. Here come one up, and he's up close enough I could have killed him. The other one was a bit behind, and offered to let my wife shoot that one. Well, let's wait. We'll get both of them. I said, that's a good idea. Didn't pan out. We lost them both. Mm-hmm. We got greedy and let that 27-pound bird get away.
What's that saying about one in the hand, two in the bush type situation, Bill?
I've heard that before.
I've messed up some doubles. Being when I first started, I didn't start turkey hunting until I was in my 20s. I didn't really know anybody that did it. And
I was almost 30.
Yeah, it's you know, if they're not around, you don't know anybody that does it. I always thought it was cool watching it, but I've never, you know, I didn't really know anybody that did it. And I made some friends, and they were nice enough to drag my big ugly face around and got me into it and doing quite a bit. But I remember we were hunting, and we took off, and these birds are gobbling, and it was just kind of this little hilltop. And my buddy set up, but he was just like a foot in elevation higher than me. And I could hear these birds were just skirting around the other side edge of this hill. And he's like, there they are. And he's like, one, two, three, nothing. And he's like, kill them. And I'm like, I can't see them. And with that, three heads came popping out around the backside of that hill. I just got a new gun. All my other guns had patterned high. So I had to put my bead low and shot up. Well, all I could see was the top of there was like the colorful part of their neck and head.
Yeah.
He came around the corner and I shot, and I'm just instinctive, put it back where it was. Dirt clods go flying. Oh, I just blasted the side of the hill.
Yeah. I could write a book about everything that's happened turkey hunting, man, because I shouldn't even tell this on myself, but three times in my lifetime I have called gobblers up. I like to call them close, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I like that 15-yard shot. Three times in my lifetime I've had birds at 15 yards or less pull the trigger, and the worst sound you can ever hear is click.
I had that happen to me once, too.
Just once?
one time with turkeys, yeah.
I've done it three times. No shell in the gun. Never put a shell in the gun. But I did have one time I had a gobbler at 11 yards, and I pulled the trigger and it clicked like that. And that bird's standing right there staring at me in full strut, you know. And I had a pump gun, laid it over inside, and I always keep a shell in my shirt pocket right there close, slipped it in, closed that action real quick, and quick shot him.
Get him from the hip?
No, from the shoulder.
John Wayne.
Yeah, John Wayne. It was a quick shot. But turkey hunting, man, you know, we're coming up here. Hey, fall turkey season, man. Either one of you guys fall turkey hunt?
I've done it before. And when I was doing it, we weren't quite as worried about the turkey numbers. And I've killed a few hens doing that. I want to do it again, but I don't know. Like, part of me thinks that the biggest trophy you can get in turkey hunting is a fall gobbler.
Absolutely.
I think it's the hardest.
Out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. It is tough. But Ray I is an absolute guru at that. And I've been with him numerous times when he'd get fall gobblers to fighting.
Well, and that's something. It's because he's going to be around tonight, right?
No, he's not going to be able to make it.
Oh, okay.
But, hey, we could have a good discussion if he was here. But it's those horse gobbler clucks that he does that with. And he would actually he'd get them coming. He'd start using fighting purrs.
Yep.
And I've seen four, five, six gobblers all get into it in the fall. And people think that stuff just doesn't happen. But he's absolutely right. Turkeys are such social birds. Mm-hmm. They're working on that pecking order every day of their life. It's not just a springtime thing. They're jostling and fighting and carrying on all the time. But to see fall gobblers, man, I mean, they're jumping and spurring each other and their feathers are flying. You think, man, they're not even fighting over a girl. They're just fighting because they're mean.
Yeah. Well, it is. And I've done it. It's really fun late season. We've bow hunted them in December. And it's not the same as calling in, you know, that gobbler, you know, and he's just pounding and doing all that. But when you call in 40 birds.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty awesome. It's very awesome. And I can tell you, I remember the day back in the 80s and the 90s when it seemed like there was a turkey behind every tree. I used to, in the fall, hunt on a farm that would have 150 birds a winter there. And I have been literally right in the middle of that whole flock. Like, I called them across the soybean field one time. They were 400 yards away. There's one little road between me and them. And I low crawled out to kind of the crest of that hump, started calling. And I had a 35 millimeter camera. I had I can't remember if it was 300 or 600. Anyway, closest I could focus was 18 feet. I couldn't focus because they were too close.
Wow.
They actually surrounded me. I was in the middle of these turkeys. And finally, some of them backed off, and I started clicking the camera, and they'd hear that camera click. And it's like it was security in numbers. They'd jump and hop and run around, you know, calm down. And I'd click again. I shot like three rows of film. They'd leave, and I'd call them back. Got some incredible fall turkey photographs, but I learned a lot about turkey behavior in that episode. It finally started drizzling rain. I didn't want to get my camera wet, so I needed to leave. So I started crawling back. I had crawled up over a riverbank and out into that field. So I'm crawling back towards the river, and I look back, and some of the younger turkeys in that flock were following me. I was on my belly. They didn't know what I was, you know. So I thought, well, I'm going to mess with them a little bit. I got up on my hands and knees. They all got a lot more nervous. I think they thought I was a coyote at that point.
Right.
But the second I stood up on 2 feet, they all hit the air.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's, well, and going back to what you're talking about with the, you know, the calling in the fall and the using gobbler yelps or Jake yelps, core stuff, I use it in the spring sometimes. You know, it's because the season's not always to where, you know, you throw out three yelps and a 2-year-old comes running, you know, if we got time for it, I got another kind of funny story.
I'd love to hear it. I might write a story about it.
We were up in Iowa turkey hunting with a buddy of mine, and it was, I had a tag, and then his friend that was an Iowa resident had two tags. So we went out that morning. I killed mine like right off the root. I mean, his feet never even got dirty. He pitched down, I heard him drum, head popped up over the hill, boom, done. And I mean, sun wasn't even up yet. It was awesome. But the whole time we were working that bird, we could hear two birds behind us going crazy. And, you know, this is, like I said, this is right at daybreak. So we grabbed mine, let's go. We got two more tags. So we took off and we're going through this stuff and we're calling. And these, it had to be 2-year-olds. They were just going nuts. Just anytime we'd make a note, and we just kept getting closer and closer. And it was kind of a part of Iowa that was just kind of rolling hills. So, we, you know, we'd crest another hill, and then we got to where, like, they have to be in the next valley over. So we worked, got about 3/4 of the way up that hill, calling. My buddy's with his friend, who was pretty inexperienced turkey hunter. My buddy stayed with him. He's like, you just stay back and call. And I'm working back and forth. I'm walking back and forth up and down the backside of that ridge and calling and throwing everything I could think of at him. And they'd, it's like they'd get to the bottom of that other side, but wouldn't come up the hill. So we got it. Okay, we got to go after him. Started crawling, crawl over the top of this hill. I'm about 30 yards behind him, still calling. And my buddy's just like, you know, they get to a certain point and then you just stop. Like, you want them to come find you, right? So that's kind of the point. So I'd sit there and I'd stop, and then I'd wait and wait. And I'd hit him with a call again, and they'd be 100 yards further. Start calling. Here they come back. And it's like they hit this invisible fence, and they would just stop. And we kept crawling, or we got up to this point to where we couldn't go any farther. And I'm calling and calling. Like, to a point, my wrist was cramping up from using a slate call so much. I had to switch to a mouth call. And I'm throwing anything I can think of. I'm doing Jake yelps. I'm doing this. I even started, like, fake spitting and drumming. You know, my buddy turns around and looks at me. I'm like, I don't know. What else can we do here? And with that, those turkeys finally broke. And they came up, and he wound up getting both of them. And we're celebrating. You know, hey, great morning. We got three dead birds on the ground. Life's good, man.
Anytime that happens, it's good.
We look up at the top of the hill that we just crawled over, and there's somebody walking. And it looked like they were wearing, like, all Carhartt brown. We're like, oh, it's a game, probably a game warden or something coming to check us. And it was... The guy starts walking down the hill, and it was he was an older gentleman, and he had on it wasn't Carhartt brown. It was just like the camo that was that old and faded. Yeah. It looked like that. And he comes walking down. And he goes, well, did you get him? I said, yeah, we got them both. He goes, I'll give you boys credit. He goes, I've never heard anything like that before in my life. He said, I've never heard that much calling before in my life. Well, we didn't. He goes, I could have shot all three of you. I said, what? He goes, you crawled within 20 yards of me.
Really?
We had no clue that he was there. We heard him yelp when we were at the bottom of the hill. We heard a very faint hen yelp, and we thought, okay, they got hens with them. That's what's going on. No, it was him at the top of the hill, and we were laughing. He goes, I've never called that much before in my life as you guys did in the last hour.
Well, you need to hunt with Ray Eye. He says you call till you make their ears bleed. And he does. I've been with him when I first started hunting to him. He just get so frustrated because he'd get a gobbler to gobble a few times, and then if it wasn't really working, move on
go, to the next
go
one.
To the next one. Call. And he just almost always find birds, man. All right, Hunter, question for you. I know you're big into this. Fall turkey hunt, if you go out, you taking your 10-gauge?
No.
Are you taking that pop gun?
I'm taking my 12-gauge.
No, probably. Oh, well, I thought sure he'd tell me he was taking a 28. He's been big on the
20. Oh, yeah.
For dove season, I was shooting that. I think for fall, I could probably, because, I don't know, for me, I'm like Justin. I really am more serious about it in spring. But
most people are, and, you know, fall turkey hunt is really falling off to what it used to be. But I'm going. I got several bunches.
I think
located.
I might try. I'm going to probably try, and I've got a lot of field that I can hunt, and a lot of times they just will cross my field in one spot.
Yep.
And so I kind of figured if I do bring like slate call.
See, he's pulling my leg.
Just,
he's going. He's going to have turkey dinner.
Real quiet.
And he just doesn't want to invite me.
I like fall turkey hunting, but not as much as spring. But you know, I might get the old 410 out for fall turkey.
There you go. Now you're talking.
Harvest a hen.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what got me all inspired. I found a piece of a turkey breast in the freezer last week, man. Mm-hmm. And I broke that out, cut it up, and I fried that. I was home by myself.
Yeah.
And I can eat this whole thing before Diane finds out. cut that up, season it good, fried it, mashed potatoes, gravy, green beans with onions and bacon, man. And I can never, ever remember a turkey tasting so good.
Mm.
Well, you know, I've been doing that chemo stuff and kind of run my taste buds, and things are coming back now.
Yeah.
I'm even growing hair again.
Yeah.
And I tell you what.
Looking fuzzy.
Yeah. So I'm ready to get in a brush and go turkey hunting, and I need another one to eat, man.
There you go.
Yep.
I am ready.
We're the best.
Yeah. We started taking and we brine them. You know, you always say, talk about brining your poultry.
Yeah.
I brine it in pickle juice.
Pickle juice.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And just,
I've never tried that. Sounds good. How long you leave it in there?
It doesn't have to be long. You can do it overnight, but usually a couple hours will do it. And I actually did it as a skewer. I cut chunks just like you would if you were going to fry it, but marinated in that. And then I did it like a shish kebab, and I did a chunk of turkey, a pickle slice, a chunk of turkey, an onion, and did that
there.
No, it turned out.
When are you going to do that for us?
Well, there's
next time you kill a turkey?
Well, there's a few breasts still in the freezer. Well, we could probably
say you kill enough turkeys this year, you could feed an army.
I'll tell you, when it comes to eating turkey, I can make a real bum out of myself.
Mm-hmm.
You betcha. Well, guys, I tell you what, it's been awesome sitting here talking turkey and all the great things that's going on with Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. And you guys, hey, got some fantastic properties listed. I know that. I'm mad at you, Hunter. You just listed my turkey farm,
say,
man.
Speaking of turkeys, I just listed. I think I'm going to call it the turkey farm.
It's a beautiful, beautiful place, almost in Shannon County. But man, I hope you get that sold quickly, because if you don't, I'm going to be sneaking down our turkey hunt.
That's Southern Den.
Yeah,
Den County. Nice.
Yeah, it's let's see. It's down Highway 19, and then off of WW.
Okay.
And it's down that way. Anyways, it's 279 acres, basically 280. Got a big barn on it, a garden shed. It's got a wet weather creek. It has a nice, pretty big house, like around 2,000 square feet with a basement. Ton of really good operating systems in the home, a little four-wheeler shed. And then it's got like... Man, I mean, the lady that owns it, she must drove me through 10, 15 different fields that
really,
small fields
that you could make into really nice food plots, which is what she did.
Sure.
Her age, she can't get it done anymore anyways. But I mean, tons of ridge tops leading down into all these little pinch points and small little fields.
Yeah.
It's going to be a cool listing.
Hey, and I give the listeners a great hint about turkey hunting that in spring, that if you look out all that back glass, just a beautiful view across the valley and up the big ridge. That big ridge you're looking at with the pine trees on top, turkeys roost up there. And let me give you a big secret, man. I've climbed that mountain several times, and I finally gave that up. Those turkeys are in that bottom at 11 o'clock in the morning, just sitting there and waiting on them.
Yeah, hanging out.
I haven't seen the place you're talking about, but you know, you're describing off the back porch and how it goes down. Man, how about sitting on that porch in like a March morning when all them birds are sounding off? I bet you just echoes through that.
I've done it. It is absolutely incredible. And of course, Mitzi, she kept up a lot of birds. She loved her birds, kept bird feeders out all the time. But just a gorgeous place.
Well, now we know how Bill Cooper killed all them 100 turkeys. He was shooting them off bird feeders.
Yeah. Yeah.
How old is Mitzi? She's in her 80s or something?
I would say so.
She's
still a funky lady, isn't she?
Oh, yeah. She was telling me about how she loves to get out there and still deer hunt and do everything.
It's so funny. I'll tell this story right quick, and then we'll wrap it up. But Mitzi Payne and her husband, Daryl, he was in the Merchant Marine for like 33 years. Yeah. They lived in California, and he was gone a lot when he finally retired. How in the world did you ever wind up out here in the Missouri Ozarks? I just wanted a remote place, and I think they had kids in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. That's how they landed.
They did, yeah.
Yeah.
They do, yeah.
But what wonderful, wonderful people. But he passed on a few years ago, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's that time of life. And I've gone through that. Hunter mm-hmm. helped me sell my place a couple of years ago and downsized, and it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. It's just another step in life. But you know what?
Yeah.
I'm still living a dream.
Yep.
Hey, folks, we hope you've enjoyed it. And all of us here at Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we live our outdoor dreams every day. We encourage you to get into the outdoors and enjoy your dreams as well.
People love a good mustache. People also love a good firearm. The fine people down at Pond Center like both. They have the largest selections of firearms in the area, and with a friendly, knowledgeable staff of hombres to help you pick the gun that's right for you, you could end up riding into the sunset with a gun you love. Find them at pc72guns.com, on shelf, in store, online, or give them a call at 573-426-GUNS. That's Pond Center. Guns welcome. Mustache appreciated.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Bow Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, The Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Pico Lures, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASL Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, Expedition Trailers, The Rambling Angler, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.